Blog Talk Radio.
Delving past the headlines, sorting through the media bias, exposing the propaganda, and challenging you to use your brain. It's time to tap into the truth.
Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is indeed time to tap into the truth. Welcome to today's broadcast. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everyone who listened in last week and participated. And as always, it is absolutely wonderful to get the interaction in the chat room and to have the people involved. I'm going to go ahead and throw out the phone number for anyone interested in calling in on today's topics so that you can have that by the ready. That number is, of course, 347-246-3550. You can give us a call, and I will be willing to discuss these topics with you. You can have your say. You can make your comments. All I ask is that you keep it clean, and let's get started. Really wanted to talk about two things this week because there were two things that really stood out more than anything. Last week, we talked about at the top of the broadcast a particular individual who has admitted to as being charged with murdering at least four people. There are four confirmed deaths that are associated with this individual. But this mass murderer is not killing people because he is crazy, per se. He's not killing people because they have done something to offend him personally, or at least not directly personally, because he didn't know these people. He's killing them in the name of his faith. He's killing them in the name of Islam. He sees these actions as an act of jihad. And this is something that Americans need to be more and more acutely aware of, because with each passing day, the threat becomes more real. Because we see it more. We understand it a little bit better. More of us have actually taken the time to look at the Quran and to look at the Hadith. We have spent a little more time to find out exactly what it is. Now, a little more than a year ago, I had a guest on this show who had written a book where he was researching the myth that there is such a thing as a peaceful Muslim. I call it a myth. He didn't put it that way. That's not his words. It's my words. And the reason I put it that way is because there is no one that is actively practicing Islam as it is pronounced by the Prophet Muhammad who can be peaceful. It's not a matter of taking it out of context. It's a matter of looking what's there. Killing infidels, which is anyone that doesn't prescribe to their belief, is not only permitted, but it is encouraged. Lying to help spread the cause of Islam is not only permitted, it is encouraged. Treating women as personal property in a majority of cases is not only permitted, it's encouraged. And we see these things being acted out on a national and an international stage if we are, in fact, paying attention to what's going on right now through the actions of groups like ISIS, for example. Women are being captured, raped, and sold as sex slaves for the crime of not being a Muslim. This is going on daily. And yet our friends on the left, who constantly claim that it is the conservatives in this country that has a war on women, say nothing about this, because they're still trying to preach to you the very notion that we can hug it out. We can come together and have a kumbaya moment. Now, I have repeatedly in recent broadcasts talked about the need to reach across the political divide that exists in this country, a divide that's being further and further widened by a group of people who are interested in keeping us divided, because as long as we're fighting with each other, we can't adequately keep an eye on them and what they're doing. That's part of the plan. Spread the seeds of chaos. Keep us fighting with each other. Keep us worried about things like, oh, I don't know, a white cop shooting a black criminal. Why should we worry about things like that? Well, because obviously we're a bunch of racists here, right? That's the story. That's what we keep being told. I've been talking more and more about trying to reach across to not those people that are creating these myths and trying to continue to propagate these stories, to continue to widen the divide, but to the actual average everyday person, people who can be reasoned with just by talking to. If we can stop finger-pointing and accusations and name-callings and actually talk to everyday people, go talk to your neighbor. Go talk to someone at your local school board meeting, to citizens. Because here, again, one more time, I'm going to say it. We as people worldwide still have way more in common than we have that divides us. We want basically the same thing. So, in general, people can be reasoned with. People are willing to make minor concessions on small points in order to live peacefully with their neighbors. Those people who are not willing to do so are generally the troublemakers. Ultimately, what has transpired over the past several months is more than just this one gentleman, and I use that term loosely, more than one person that is engaged in what he considers to be acts of jihad. There are several. I came across a story this past week discussing 10 separate incidents, one of which was the one we were talking about last week, Ala Mohammed Brown. Now, this guy was in Seattle initially. He's currently in jail. He's got a $5 million bail currently for the alleged murder of a college student back in late June. Now, he's already been charged with gunning down two men at 29th and King Street in Seattle back on June 1st. And he is now the prime suspect in a fourth homicide. Four people confirmed that we know of. Now, the report that we got from this, in its fifth paragraph, without elaboration, stated, quote, multiple sources with knowledge of the investigation say that Brown told police he carried out the murders because he was on a jihad to kill Americans. Now, it was also added that deep in its story about Brown and the murders he's committed, prosecutors say Brown is a devout Muslim who has become angered by U.S. military intervention in the Islamic world, which he referred to as evil. Now, we gave you that quote, that part of that quote, last week. Now, here's the thing. If these news outlets that we are supposed to count on, that we're supposed to believe, that we're supposed to have watching out for us, because that was the initial job of the media, if you'll recall. That's why we have freedom of the press, so that those in power can be challenged, both at the government level and at the corporate level, so that the common person has a window into what's really going on, so that you don't have to be completely in the dark, which is where they would like to keep us. Now, if these news outlets were committed to informing Americans about the true nature and the magnitude of the jihad threat, this seemingly insignificant detail would be in the headline and would be central to all of the reporting on the case. But that's not the case. In fact, the mainstream media in general doesn't want to talk about the jihadist cases. The only reason we're hearing more about it is thankfully there are conservative media outlets that are trying to get all the information in your hands. That's just one of the incidents, though. Another Muslim from Seattle, and please forgive the pronunciations, but Musab Muhammad Mazamira was sentenced several weeks ago to 10 years in prison for pouring gasoline into the stairway of a rather infamous gay nightclub by the name of Neighbors, and then setting this stairway on fire. This happened last New Year's Eve. And when the club was crowded, and if the fire had not been put out, the carnage would have been unimaginable because the place was filled up with New Year's Eve partiers. Now, this incident should have been the impetus for the national discussion of violent Sharia enforcement in the U.S. We keep hearing from organizations like CHAIR that Sharia is actually acceptable within the confines of our Constitution. This, of course, is a lie because our Constitution is all about granting individual liberties and freedoms. Sharia law is about having no freedom whatsoever. Not if you're one of the regular everyday minions. But instead of us discussing violent enforcement of Sharia, we ignored it. And the fact that an examination of what could be done to stop Sharia vigilantism also could be a very important point here. But instead, the mainstream media, again, largely ignored the story in total. And when they couldn't ignore it completely, they ignored a lot of the obvious facts. I don't know, like the motive. In one of the reports I came across involving this story, it was discussed as a homophobia with no hint whatsoever. This was a hate crime against homosexuals carried out by a homophobic individual with no hint whatsoever that this was one of the first incidents of violent Sharia enforcement in the U.S. over the course of the last year. There's yet a third case. Friend of the Boston Marathon jihadist mass murderer was found guilty of hindering the FBI investigation. In late July, according to the Los Angeles Times, a friend of Boston Marathon bombing suspect Zakhar Tarnoff was convicted this past Monday of hindering the FBI investigation into the April 2013 blast by hiding the backpack from one of the two brothers from authorities. Now, the individual was convicted in federal court in Boston and now faces up to 20 years in prison. The individual could be a fool, a dupe, or, as his defense attorneys put it, he actually could just be a good kid, a mama's boy. Or he could be a true believer, like his friend, hindering the investigation not solely out of loyalty to his friend, but because he believes in the same cause, that of jihad and Islam. And that could be the motivation that not only moved these two brothers to commit mass murder at the Boston Marathon, but the question still remains, was it not important enough to even be mentioned at the trial? It appears that to have investigated such questions as that would have been Islamophobic. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm about over the term Islamophobic. The definition of Islamophobic, as the folks on the left would have us believe, is an irrational fear of Islam. The actual definition of Islamophobic, politically correct term used to silence those who would question Islam and those who follow it. That's the definition. That's the danger. That's the threat. Was this an act of jihad in an attempt to try and help protect the brothers? Or were they part of a bigger cell, much to the dismay and despise of what our government wants us to know and what it wants us to think? But I'll continue. In Texas, two Muslims were arrested on a jihad terror charge as well. We had Rahut Askim Khan, an American citizen born in Bangladesh. He wanted to join the Somali jihad terror group Al-Shahabib. He was not Somali and did not have any connections to Somalia. He just wanted to wage jihad. Michael Todd Wolf, a convert to Islam from Houston, wanted to head to Syria for his jihad. Wife told a person who turned out to be an undercover FBI agent that her husband longed to perform a violent form of jihad. Wolf's wife also said, quote, just wants to hop into Syria. He's just ready to die for his din, which, of course, is another word for religion. Now, according to the FBI, Wolf's jihad aspirations didn't end with Syria. He indicated that he had learned that Al-Qaeda in Syria was training brothers from other countries, we know them as foreign fighters, and then sending those fighters back from Syria to their home countries to conduct terror attacks. In Florida, a Muslim who threatened a second 9/11 was found guilty of terror charges. Back in mid-June, a Tampa Muslim named Sami Asimak was convicted of plotting to bomb a Tampa bar and then blow himself up in a jihad martyrdom suicide attack in another crowded area of the city. Asimak said that of non-Muslims, quote, we will go after every one of them. Their kindergartens, their shopping centers, their nightclubs, their police stations, their courthouses, and everything until we have an Islamic State, the whole world. Concerned yet? Have you heard of these stories yet? There's more. The sixth story on the list was about a Muslim who wanted to murder 100,000 American cops. Ahmed Abbasi, according to the New York Post, wanted to derail a New York to Toronto Amtrak train. He also discussed with another jihad terrorist, quote, a plot to release bacteria in the air or water to kill up to 100,000 people. Excuse me. He was also, according to a Manhattan U.S. attorney, Prit Barra, plotting to commit acts of terror and develop a network of terrorists here in the United States. Abbasi could have gotten 50 years in prison. But see, he avoided terrorism charges by pleading guilty in Manhattan federal court to lying on his visa application. And to immigration officials, when asked why he flew to the United States in 2013, consequently, he could soon be a free man. Now, did you hear that? He avoided terrorism charges because he pled guilty to falsifying something on his visa. So then he's kept separate. He's treated as if his crime wasn't one of an act of terrorism, wasn't one of a desire to kill American citizens, attempting to carry out a plot that he was developing, but a simple matter of lying on his visa. So it's an immigration affair. And we know how illegal immigration issues are handled in this country. Not only could he be free in a short time, but he'll probably be given a parade by this administration. Have you heard this story? Has our media done its job in keeping us informed? No, because they're too busy trying to protect a minority. And there are times when a minority should be protected. Don't get me wrong, okay? But there are times when everyone should be given all the information available because it is an issue of our safety. In Rochester, New York, a Muslim was charged with plotting jihad of U.S. troops and Shiites in Western New York. Now, according to the Associated Press, they reported back on June 2nd that Mufid Efjia, a Muslim businessman in Rochester, bought two handguns and the silencers as part of a plan to kill members of the U.S. armed forces returning from war, as well as Shiite Muslims in Western New York. Now, the AP anxiously, as ever, to deflect focus away from Islamic Jihad, in its lead paragraph, explained that Efjia was plotting to kill troops as vengeance for American actions overseas. So then why did he want to kill Shiites as well? As vengeance for Iran being a bitter enemy of his bitter enemy, the U.S.? Now, obviously, Efjia is a Sunni Islamic jihadist who wants to kill members of groups that he considers to be his enemies, groups that he considers to be enemies of Islam. But you're not going to hear that from the AP. They're not going to include that in their story because they don't want you to know. In Virginia, two Muslims convicted of piracy were ready to launch rocket-propelled grenades at Navy ships. Two Somali Muslims, Mohammed Abdi Jamal, and I'm not even going to attempt the pronunciation of the other, sorry, you guys will have to look it up. But each of them got over 40 years in prison last May for plotting to shoot a rocket-propelled grenade at the Navy ship Ashland. They each got sentences slightly longer than 40 years rather than life imprisonment, apparently because the RPG that one of them was holding was broken and incapable of firing. Or could it maybe be because the U.S. District Judge, a certain Raymond A. Jackson, believed that life imprisonment was cruel and unusual punishment? That question's asked because he has been reluctant to give life sentences as the activist judge that he is. Is firing an RPG at a Navy ship not cruel and unusual punishment for those on the ship? Would be the question I would ask. What are they being punished for? When you have jihad as your way, then all who are not part of your brand of Islam is an enemy. We need to keep that in mind, boys and girls. In Minneapolis, a lady who happens to follow the practice of Islam, gets 3 years probation for lying about funding a jihad group. This also happened back in May. And according to KSTP.com, a Muslim woman in Minneapolis named Shanaib Abdurrashid Hussein got 3 years probation for lying to a grand jury about her efforts to raise money for jihad terrorists in Somalia. On June 16, 2009, according to the report, the defendant lied to a United States grand jury saying that she did not participate in raising monies for the individuals who left Minnesota to fight against Ethiopian troops then present in Somalia, assisting with the international recognized transitional federal government of Somalia. Now you say participate with who? Where are her partners in this endeavor now? What are they doing? Does anyone know? Does anyone in our media or in our government even care? They were able to prove she lied about it. A group of Muslims from Minnesota went to go fight against a nationally recognized group who, just by the way, happens to be a government that is trying to base their movement on not Sharia, not Islam, but a secular government. That is why they were raising money. That is why they're going to go fight. Now, back in Texas, Houston, Muslim arrested for making terroristic threats and displaying hoax bomb after four-hour standoff at a Walmart. Now, this individual was waving a knife around. Again, I'm not going to attempt the pronunciation on the name. If you want to look up the story, it's easy enough to find. You can find videos of these reports on YouTube. You can find it through search. But you're not going to find them in the headlines of your local paper, and you're not going to see them as the lead stories on your evening news. But it's important we know about this, so let me continue. He was waving the knife around. He also had what police described as, quote, several unknown devices. He had these in his pockets. Now, after a four-hour standoff with police in the Walmart parking lot, which kept customers trapped inside the store, the individual was arrested and charged with, quote, making terroristic threats and displaying a hoax bomb, which are both Class A misdemeanor charges. Bond was set at $5,000. America, here is your future. Here is the future you have chosen by electing the people that we currently have in office that would rather ignore the threats and pretend that we're safe, that this is a problem somewhere else. Almost to a man or woman, willfully ignorant about the nature and magnitude of the jihad threat, and who completely, complacently trust that a Muslim community in the U.S. that is a largely under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood will clean its own house. Here's the future you have chosen by standing by and passively ignoring the fact that the mainstream media is not going to tell us the truth, by passively acquiescing to the mainstream media's willful ignorance regarding the threat and its demonization and marginalization of everyone, and I mean everyone, who told you about this threat, honestly. Incidents like this happen way more frequently than we realize. Not too long from now, it wouldn't be surprising if they didn't happen on a daily basis. Why would I be concerned about that? Well, let's talk about something that happened in San Diego this week, shall we? Now, for those of you who may not have heard, and I understand that there are probably a lot of folks who haven't heard about it, because, again, I didn't hear about it through the broadcast news. I heard about it through conservative media outlets. We had an incident where we had the beaches of San Diego stormed. That's really not much of an exaggeration in this particular case. We had an incident where there's supposed to be illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, who made their way across the border not through the traditional means of land, but by coming by boat. Now, nearly two dozen illegal aliens successfully landed on the San Diego beach. This happened back on Monday. And they ran to the shore. Around 7 a.m. Monday morning, a horde of illegal aliens stormed a San Diego beach after coming ashore in a panga boat. They sprinted across the beach and they climbed over a wall, entering the city. After eyewitnesses called the police, seven of the illegal aliens were spotted by helicopter and later apprehended several blocks from the beach. Border agents are still looking for the last 10 more who remain at large. They tried this again the very next day, Tuesday, but this time, thanks to the photos and the reports, the U.S. Customs and Border agents were waiting for them. 12 of the first wave of illegals are still unaccounted for, and many residents are asking why it took eyewitness photos and TV reports to get border agents to act. Quote, how many of these boats may have landed in the past weeks or months who haven't been caught? How do we know these are just illegal aliens? What if terrorists are coming in at night? Is there no one to stop them? Now, that's a question asked by a local resident. Now, on the Tuesday morning, the second panga boat filled with 20 illegal aliens was intercepted about a little bit off the coast of San Diego County by U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents. The panga boat and passengers were taken to the Oceanside Harbor, where they were turned over to the U.S. Border Patrol for processing. There were 20 illegal aliens on board, all Mexican nationals except two men from Guatemala and one from El Salvador. Now, most of us who've heard this story have heard of it through the Internet and conservative media outlets, unless you happen to live in and around the San Diego area, where it's a big deal for them. Funny how the media gets on board with a story when they actually see that their own lives may be in danger. And the question to be asked is an obvious one. What if it is terrorist? What if these people are not who we're being told they are? Make no mistake, we do have the resources and the capability of stopping this. So I want you to remember, if we do get hit by an enemy, whether it be ISIS or anyone else who just wants to kill Americans, if it is just gang members from Mexico who goes on a killing spree or goes around doing unspeakable things, that happens. It was our federal government and this administration that allowed it to happen. They have been so busy looking the other way, they're not willing to stand up and recognize this threat for what it is. We are living in perilous times. We are in danger from a multitude of threats, but they all keep coming back to one single threat, and that is complacency. We as Americans have become complacent in our lives. We see things going on with a much larger clarity than we've ever had before when we see it happening in other parts of the world. But to us, it's still in another part of the world. We feel safe here. We think, why should we ever go over there? It's dangerous there. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not as safe as we think we are. The United States of America is the safest place in the world. I don't doubt that for a second. I honestly believe we are the safest place in the world. But we are not one of us, not any of us, truly safe. Whether you're going into a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, whether you're going into a nightclub in New York, whether you're going to a pre-award party, people get shot, stabbed, bludgeoned to death. In the United States, every day, Detroit resembles a war zone at times. By now, most of us have seen in our social media sites the pictures of Detroit with the meme that, meanwhile in Afghanistan, meanwhile in Baghdad. Oh, wait, that's Detroit. I think most of us have probably seen that by now, and if you haven't, I don't think it'll be hard for you to find it if you want to go look for it. The point is, we are not safe. We do not live in a safe world. And Barack Obama's little statement about how the world has always been messy, we're just more aware of it now because of social media, like a lot of other things, there's a lot of half-truth to it. Because we are. There are a lot of people that are more acutely aware of what's going on in other places around the world because of social media, because unfiltered news is getting out. This unfiltered news that they can't control is the reason why the president, if you want to call him that, wants the authority, the power, to have a kill switch, to just cut the internet off in the event of national emergency, in the best interest of America, of course. I mean, what other purpose would he have? I will go in right now and slide into this week's outrage of the week. We had the new press secretary telling the American public and the media that the problem this past week when Obama admitted that we don't have a strategy for dealing with ISIS, that wasn't the administration's fault. That was the media's fault. It's the media's fault because of how it's being reported. That's outrageous. If you heard that and you weren't immediately incensed, if you weren't immediately outraged by that statement, then either you aren't paying attention or you've OD'd on the Kool-Aid. That is our outrage of the week, by the way. How on earth does a press secretary get away with becoming a propagandist? It's been going on for a little while now, and it just seems to be getting worse. saw a story that I had wished was a joke story. It seems to be legit. O.J. Simpson wants to convert to Islam. O.J. Simpson, you know, the former American football player, former American movie star, the guy who's been in prison in Nevada since 2008 on charges of kidnapping and armed robbery and retaliation, of course, for the robbery that took place when he was trying to get his sports memorabilia back. An armed robbery in which he strong-armed along with a couple other people. They went to the Palace Station Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas and was trying to steal back sports memorabilia that he claimed was stolen from him. Now, after seeing his appeal for a retrial, essentially quashed, and being informed back in July of 2013 that he will serve at least another 4 years, Simpson has embraced Islam in a bid to change his life. Sources supposedly close to O.J. says that O.J. really thought that he was going to be successful in a bid for a new trial and evidently thought that he would be released from prison. But now he's not eligible for parole until late 2017, which angered him. The disgraced 67-year-old former star has become interested in the religion of peace through his friendship with former heavyweight champion Mike Tyson, who was imprisoned in the early 1990s, as you remember, and happens to be a devout Muslim. Simpson has been studying the Quran, but failed to successfully fast during the holy month of Ramadan. An inside source also said that O.J. didn't quite make it through the entire fasting process. He cheated during the day and brought snacks from the prison canteen. But he was really serious about converting to Islam. O.J. even made himself a prayer rug for his prison cell. He really likes the idea that upon converting to Islam, all of his previous sins are forgiven. Well, I suppose at the very least, O.J. probably has several sins to be forgiven for. But that's where we're at in America. It's evidently not a joke story. A lot of people thought it was because it was initially part of an Inquirer story. Yeah, we all know what a reliable source the National Inquirer is. How does this happen, ladies and gentlemen? How do we have a media that insists on keeping us in the dark about the truth? Are they scared? Have they been threatened? Do they not have an option in this? I don't know. All I know is that we are called to be bold. We are called to stand in the face of our fear for our family, for our brothers and sisters' sake. We are called to stand in wisdom and to act. We are to act with wisdom, but with courage. But in the grand scheme of things, we ultimately still have to come back to a simple starting point. We don't all have a bully pulpit from which we can scream out our ideas and reach out to our friends and neighbors and reach to others that we may never meet. Social media and the internet has allowed us to have much, much closer to that than we've ever had before. How many followers do you have on Twitter? How many friends do you have on Facebook? How many of you are spending time at teapartycommunity.com? How many of you are spending time at ladypatriotspace.com? Excuse me. Feeling a little under the weather at the moment. Hope you'll forgive the occasional cough. If you're spending time there, if you have people in your contact list, then you have that bully pulpit. You have that opportunity to reach out to people, and that's where you start. Not with name-calling, not with gestures of bad faith, but in simple discussions. Did you hear about this? Do you know about this? What's the truth about this? Did you hear the news today about how Israel destroyed a hospital? That's your opening. Yes, yes, actually I did. But you realize that members of Hamas were using that hospital to launch rockets into Israel? Did you hear the story about today how Israel destroyed a school? It was a UN school. It wasn't even Palestinian. It was a UN school. There's your opening. Well, yes, yes, I did. Did you know that in the basement of that school, Hamas was keeping weapons and also firing rockets into Israel? Did you hear that Israel destroyed a high-rise today? Did you hear that Hamas was using it as a controlled and command structure? Do you hear the truth that the people who will not stop until they have killed every last Jew were using that building to carry out their plan of global jihad? Did you hear that ISIS is now moving further and further into Jordan? Because I doubt you're hearing that. Not unless you're tuned in to certain sources. You're not hearing it in the mainstream media. In fact, we still have politicians that refuse to admit that ISIS is a problem anywhere outside of Syria or Iraq. We still have politicians who see the reports, who have the intel in front of them, but because they don't want to panic the American citizens, they're not telling us the truth about what's going on there. They don't want us to know, because then we might ask them, why aren't they doing more? And that's a great question. Why aren't we doing more? Why don't we have a plan in place? Why does the Obama administration not have a strategy for ISIS? They told us over a year ago that they were formulating said plan, that they would be keeping in check organizations like the JV. Barack Hussein Obama referred to ISIS as the JV, and now we have people in high places in this government saying, we have never seen anything the like of ISIS. They are better funded. They are better organized. They have military training. Did we really just underestimate them? Did we really not have the appropriate level of intel? I find it hard to believe that nobody knew what was happening. How did nobody know what was happening? It's not possible, ladies and gentlemen. They had a watchful eye. They knew what was coming. But we have the most ridiculous excuse for a commander-in-chief in the history of this nation. He has no interest whatsoever in doing anything other than promoting Islam in America. Most of us have never heard it, but do you realize that when NASA scrapped the shuttle program, its primary mission became Muslim outreach? Would you mind telling me exactly what the point is of NASA being involved with Muslim outreach? Unless they're trying to establish the first caliphate on Mars, it doesn't make a lot of sense. At least not to me. If you've got a better idea, if you understand it, please enlighten me, because this is one I don't know about. If there's a logical explanation, I would really love to know what it is. And it is absolutely imperative that we start pressuring our media to tell us the truth. It is absolutely imperative that we start pressuring our elected representatives to do their jobs and do the right thing. There are so many of them that have been involved in the world of politics for so long, they're clueless to what that even means. So we have to remind them. We have to hold them accountable. This is still our country. It's not theirs. It's ours. And they work for us. They have to be reminded of that constantly. We have some good folks there, but they are few, they are far between, and they are alone. We have an opportunity coming up in the November elections to send them some reinforcements, and we need to. We need to do all of this before it becomes too late. We need to do all of this while there is still time for us to salvage this once great nation and return her to her glory, because we are the bright, shining city on the hill. We are the world's last hope, a determination of the American people. All is lost. And that means we've got to throw aside the divisions. We have to stop letting hucksters and conmen like Al Sharpton continue to divide us. We have to stop looking for excuses to not like each other and just roll up our sleeves and go to work with our neighbors, not just our friends, not just the people that we know and trust, but with everyone, so that we can see what we have in common. We all have a vested interest in liberty. We all have a vested interest in freedom. We all get the same sense of personal pride by working hard for what we do, by earning what we have. We don't get that if we're on the government gravy train. But instead of attacking those people that are on the government dole, talk to them. And even though it's hard sometimes, trust me, I've been having these conversations for a while. The best thing we can do is to still appeal to common sense. When I was a manager at a quick service restaurant chain in East Knoxville, a large number of the employees there, as well as a large number of the customers, were of a minority. Not all the same minority either, but one predominant over the others. There is this misconception among a lot of folks on the conservative side that all black folks supported Obama from the start. It's not true. They didn't, and I can tell you that from personal experience. But there is this misunderstanding within the communities where people think that, hey, well, you do owe me something because of how I've been treated. So you should just give us this. But when I broke it down and we had legitimate conversations, always had these conversations when it was appropriate. We can find ways to have these appropriate conversations. The timing has to be right. They have to be open to listening. And we have to make sure when we have these conversations, we are not name-calling, that we're not attacking, we're not calling people stupid. We are doing all the things that allow us to communicate with one another. And during the course of these conversations, you relate it to their world. Nobody cares about what the tax rate is if they're not paying taxes. Nobody thinks that it's unfair for rich people to pay a lot more taxes until they themselves are the person that's rich. So the popular out that was always an opportunity for us to get into these conversations when I worked there was the lottery. For the longest time, Tennessee did not participate in any lotteries, and then eventually we did. And then every time the jackpot got over $100 million, people were pulling together money and they were buying lottery tickets. So that was my opportunity to ask them about how they were prepared to give up a big chunk of the winnings if they won. And that's when inroads could be made, because you open up to the real-world possibility. Here, this person who felt like they've never had anything, that they're owed all this stuff, suddenly, if they could put themselves in the shoes of people who did have something to lose, suddenly then they could honestly think about what they would do and how they would react faced with the fact that you have a government that wants to do nothing but take from you just to give it away. That is a good starting point. It's a great place to start the conversation, because when they are able to see for themselves and think for themselves about how unfair it is, then the conversation about earned income credits got taken in. A ton of folks I know, including myself, have taken big advantage of the earned income credits. But the point still comes back is, how much sense does it make for anyone to have money taken from them just to give it away to someone else? When it's laid out factually, hey, here's your money. Why should you ever get back more than what you paid in? Most people can agree with that logic, as long as they don't know directly that you're saying, hey, well, that's exactly what's happening when you get this, because everybody wants their free stuff. That's the way the government has set it up. They want people dependent. And the only way we can get people to drag themselves away from that dependence is by helping them to see how dependent they really are, and to help them to understand how much better they feel about themselves and their situation when they don't have that dependence. When they can see how unfair it is, is the only time that you can make the point that it's not fair. When you're not thinking about it and you're just receiving the benefits from it, it seems like the fairest thing in the world. You have to communicate, though. That's our responsibility. That's our job. That's what we have to do. I see right now that Mr. Prime Directive is in the chat room, and I want to welcome him to listening to the show. Giving a shout-out to him and understanding that his show is one of my favorites here on Blog Talk. So everybody, if you have a chance, please check it out. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to change gears, though. And when we get right back, we're going to talk about the Burger King issue. So stay with me. We'll be right back.
So are you going to go?
After all that has been said and done, after the tolling of the bell. never recognize the hurt you held within, held within.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for staying with me. Appreciate everybody listening to the show, and I always enjoy having this opportunity to be with you and to talk to you guys. Wanted to talk about this Burger King thing, because seriously, this has got to be, I don't know how this becomes such a major topic, quite honestly. It's funny to me that people want to debate it. But, you know, for a while now, we've been listening, we've been hearing that we're supposed to pay our taxes because that's the patriotic thing to do. We've heard this from Joe Biden in the past, and we know he's been out there spreading the gospel according to Barack when he's saying this. The left is always about paying your taxes, paying your taxes, paying your taxes. But I realize that the media also plays a major role in trying to paint this picture of somehow some level of disloyalty from the brand. Somehow Burger King is being unreasonable in its desire to try and avoid paying corporate taxes. They don't get out scot-free with no corporate taxes by going to Canada. They get out of paying the highest corporate tax rate in the world by leaving the United States. The way the laws are set up in this country right now, it is perfectly okay for Burger King to decide at any point in time that it wants to move its corporate headquarters, essentially wants to give up its American citizenship, so to speak. Now, I've heard some folks on the right stand up in defense of Burger King, and I've heard a lot of folks on the left lash out at Burger King, and they're even trying to organize boycotts and all this other stuff, but in a lot of ways, this becomes primarily about what's best for the people who work for Burger King and now Tim Hortons, because that's really what's precipitating this move. Burger King is buying out Tim Hortons for an ungodly amount of cash. So in order to try and recoup their losses, they're quickly trying to move to a point where they can make up for this money with profits from the Tim Hortons ownership and trying to make up for losses that they would lose if they stayed here in the States and continue to pay the highest corporate tax rate in the world. Now, for those of you who think it's just about corporate greed, well, there may be some greed at play there. I don't doubt that. But like I said, it's the best thing for all the people that work for the company, too, because it means there's going to be more money for more employees to be hired and for those employees to get raises. I've heard a lot of different examples given in attempt. You know, again, I, before the break, was just talking about how we have to make our arguments in ways that are logical, factually correct, actually in good spoken English might help too. And we have to give examples that they're going to understand. And I've heard all kinds of different examples, some of them pretty much well over the heads of a lot of folks. But the bottom line is I think it's as simple as saying, if you live in one town and you're going to go spend $100, that's what you have for groceries, but your city has a higher sales tax than the town right across from you, 20-minute drive from where you're at. And it's going to make a 10% difference. Are you a traitor to that city just because you move over and go do your grocery shopping one town over, where your dollars are going to buy you more groceries? I don't know. But Larry's on the line. Mr. Prime Directive, I like to call him. And we're going to go ahead and get him on the line. How are you doing, Larry?
Oh, I'm doing good. And, Tim, I just wanted to add to that, it's not just about the United States having the highest corporate tax rate in the world. It's also the fact that overseas earnings aren't taxed at that highest corporate tax rate, and the United States is the only country that does it. So if, without that shift to Canada, every dollar that Burger King earns in a foreign country is being taxed in a, here in America at the American rate, and other countries don't do that. So it's a huge disadvantage, and it could be entirely eliminated by passing the fair tax.
Excuse me. Again, yeah, you know by now, Larry, I'm a big fair tax guy. I love the way it was written up, and I'd love to see it passed and instituted. Anything that takes power away from the IRS is a good thing. Anything that helps reduce the scope of the federal government is a good thing. But, you know, it also comes to me, the first thing that should have anybody clued in that this doesn't serve the American people's interest is when they hear this administration throwing around phrases like patriotism, economic or otherwise, because they don't look at patriotism the way most, if you'll forgive the old adage, red-blooded Americans do. They see patriotism as a phrase. It's a way to control the conversation. They want to paint this picture that Burger King is somehow being un-American by trying to do what generally I think of as the most patriotic thing you can do, and that's pay as little taxes to the federal government as possible. Go ahead.
Well, in fact, that kind of logic is, in debating is called the straw man argument, where when you can't win your argument on facts, you bring up the straw man to distract from what's really at stake. And so they bring up patriotism, when in fact, a lot of people who aren't patriotic are having to renounce their United States citizenship because they live overseas and they don't earn income in the United States, and they probably won't come back to the United States, but they still have to pay taxes on everything they earn in that foreign country and send it into the federal government. And it literally puts them in the position where they have to renounce their citizenship and go through that process. And I think they also have some kind of exit tax before you can take your money out of the United States or do this renunciation, which is a throwback to what Nazi Germany did. When the Jews wanted to leave Germany, they had to pay their exit tax.
Well, there's no question. There's one thing that National Socialist, a.k.a. Nazis, and currently it looks like the National Democratic Party as well, they're really good at collecting money. They're just not so good with spending it responsibly. If they had their way, there'd be a tax on everything. We see it from carbon taxes to the idea that somehow the EPA has the right to consider carbon a pollutant. It's all about what they can't do legislatively, they do executively.
Well, here in the
go ahead.
Oh, here in the local news front, there's a 600 megawatt coal burning power plant that is being shut down due to this Obama thing. If you can have a coal powered plant, it's going to bankrupt you, and the power company is being forced by the EPA to shut it down. So that's 600 megawatts of generating capacity gone, vanished. So where are we going to get our power? Maybe they're going to put a few windmills out in the ocean. They're talking about that. But most people like their power working when the wind isn't blowing.
Well, yeah, not only that, but what about the folks that work there and work to supply the coal to it? And literally thousands of people affected. And who cries for them? Certainly not the Obama administration.
Yeah, I just drove by there due to a detour a couple weeks ago, and I didn't see any pollution. I didn't see anything coming out of there at all. I just saw like a big coal conveyor belt going over one of the streets and into the place. It seemed pretty innocuous to me. And Al Gore said that by now the polar ice caps would be gone, when in fact they're gaining in size. And I just saw a news story that in the past 2 years, the polar ice caps have increased in the area the size of Alaska.
Well, that's only because of the great works of people like Al Gore and our beloved leader. They're out there making all these changes, you know.
Yeah.
It's scary what happens when you confront these people with facts, too. The straw man argument is exactly what gets put in play here. But like I said, as soon as I hear Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, I hear any of these people use the word patriotism in relation to anything else, my antenna goes up. I'm hearing the Star Trek red alert going off in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
There is something that these guys are trying to manipulate, and they don't want us to see the truth. It's like Harry Reid saying that our border is secure when we have illegals storming the beaches in San Diego. It is just part of this fallacy that they're still trying to claim that they're in control rather than admitting that the adults aren't in charge anymore. And we have got to take the steps to correct that. And that, I really honestly believe, starts with us talking to our friends, our neighbors, the people who will listen. That's why I get on here and have these times here on the show. That's why you do your show. And, you know, we want to make sure that people understand that you're not getting the whole truth. And we have to hold these people accountable because that's who we sent to be in charge. And at least right now, we have the power to change that, too.
Now, I just covered this charge. There's a charge in the U.S. Code called dereliction of duty, which applies to members of the military. And I would think, though I'm not a lawyer, that the commander-in-chief would also be covered because he's the commander-in-chief of the military. And he is definitely guilty of dereliction of duty when he should be in the Situation Room figuring out what we're going to do about this problem. He goes, makes a brief remark, and then hits the golf course.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that there is a firm lack of leadership. Not only is Barack too busy to come out and make leadership decisions because he's vacationing at Martha's Vineyard, but he's also too cowardly to come out and tell the American people the truth. We just saw Prime Minister Cameron come out and make a statement this past week, being a little more blunt than I have seen any of the world leaders be recently, talking about how we have to face the threat of Islam head on. But here we have somebody who offhandedly, mistakenly, admits that they have no plan to deal with ISIS. So I think dereliction of duty doesn't quite cover it. This guy has never taken the time to start governing. He's never left campaign mode, ever. He's about halfway through his second term in office and has never stopped campaigning. He is either on vacation or he is at a fundraiser. If you can find him doing anything else, go ahead.
I'm thinking that dereliction of duty is another thing that qualifies as high crimes and misdemeanors, meaning another impeachable offense. Now, I just don't know what's wrong with our representatives. They're guilty of violating their oath of office simply because they have not moved to impeach. That's the constitutional remedy that's given for a president who doesn't perform and is guilty of multiple criminal offenses and has members of his cabinet who are guilty of criminal offenses. And their oath of office is to uphold the Constitution, and I think they need to be hustled out of there in a hurry if they're not moving to impeach. That's the constitutional method of dealing with this situation.
Right. Well, you know, here I have been calling for Boehner to either step up and do his job or to step aside for a long time. He refuses to use the power of the purse to defund all of the unconstitutional programs that are using. And just because they don't have the political will, because they are afraid that it will somehow create sympathy for the Democratic Party, they don't want to impeach. This little lawsuit they filed instead of moving forward with impeachment, it's ridiculous.
Well, have you heard, I haven't heard what they're actually suing to accomplish, because normally when you sue someone, you're either asking for money or you're asking them to do something, or not do something under order of the court. Now, obviously, you're not going to get money out of Obama, so what are you ordering him or suing him to have him do? Promise not to do anymore what he's doing? And by the time it gets through the courts, he'll be out of office or his term will be up. Hopefully he'll be out of office. And at that point, the court will say the suit is moot, the situation no longer applies, case dismissed. And if not, they could dismiss it earlier. And either way, nothing good can come out of it. It's just the duck and cover that Boehner's trying to pull off just to say he's doing something when he's doing less than something.
And yet he doesn't understand why people are frustrated and why the Tea Party is moving to work against him and other Republicans that aren't upholding not only their oath of office, but they're not standing by any type of conservative principles. It's almost as if a lot of them are just thinking, sometime in the near future, it'll be my turn. And I want that same power. And the Constitution be damned. And if we don't call them on that, if we don't stand up with a single voice, we, the American people, then they're going to get away with it. And we've been on this road of liberal incrementalism for a long time. We keep being told we have to negotiate. We have to compromise. We have to compromise. We have to negotiate. So here we are. We have these two points where we start at. We want free trade. Over here, we want complete, total state control of our economy. Well, let's compromise. The conservatives come halfway across. There's some government controls. That's fine. Next year, after this is passed, well, again, the folks on the left, we want complete, total government control. The folks that compromised a year ago, again, are told they have to compromise again. And we eventually end up running some calculus equation where we're seeking an upper or lower bound. And do we ever get to a solution? No. As long as we keep compromising with people that are starting at the same point, we never get anywhere but where they want to be. So it makes perfect sense why they want to compromise, but there does come a point where we have to draw a line in the sand. No more compromises, no more moving this side. Do we need to build bipartisan coalitions? Yes, but to some of the people that are Democrats that aren't complete leftist loons need to start helping stir that party back to being a patriotic, America-loving party instead of this national socialist party that they've become. Sorry about the rant.
Yeah. Well, it's all true. I wouldn't call it a rant. I don't know where we go from here, but I guess just keep the pressure on Congress.
I mean, we have to. And it's important that people understand. I keep hearing this, well, why would you bother trying to impeach the president? The Senate would never convict him anyway. It doesn't matter if the Senate would convict. It matters that you upheld your oath in the House and you did what you're supposed to do. You see this man abusing executive power, of exceeding his limitations of the Constitution, doing things that are in fact illegal. And if you want to go as far back as the cover he's laying down for Holder with the Fast and the Furious issue, he has literally has a lawless administration where if you are black, you can't commit a crime. If you're not, well, if you're a liberal, you're probably okay. If you're conservative, you're the enemy. Jihadists trying to cross the border and kill Americans, you're not an enemy. Illegal immigrants coming from who knows what drug-running businesses that have helped coyote them across the border so that they can work for them, you're not committing a crime. You're collapsing, Cloward and Piven, classic, collapsing local school systems with these children that have been sent up from the Central American countries. None of that is criminal. That's it all. Humanitarian efforts. We are loving, welcoming people, which is true. We are. America has embraced more nationalities. America has embraced more people than any other nation around the world. We are, or at least at one point were, a melting pot. But the problem with the melting pot theory for the folks on the left is that It allows people to come together under a single culture. It allows people to honor their ancestors, but be a part of something new, something stronger, a fabric weaved together so that the diversity actually is a strength, so that we can understand our enemies, so that we can learn from our past. What we have now is people that deal with divisiveness as if it's just some other tool to be used to help win elections. Our politics in this country has become more about playing the game than it has been about offering up any type of real solutions. And anytime anybody like a Ted Cruz or Rand Paul stands up and tries to offer an actual solution, they get shouted down. They get called all kinds of names, and they get treated like they're a three-headed monster that has no business speaking in public. Meanwhile, people like Nancy Pelosi says the most ridiculous things about whatever topic she's asked, and she's held up like some type of hero. Go ahead.
Yeah, there is a double standard there between Republicans and Democrats. I want to ask you, have you heard anything about the trial that's going on here in Virginia? It's the biggest thing here since the O.J. Simpson trial of our former Governor McDonnell and his wife. You heard anything about that?
I've heard a few things here and there, but I really haven't been following it too closely.
Well, yeah, he and his wife are being put on trial for charges that could send them to the big house for life. They're charging they took something like $160,000 in loans and gifts from some businessman. They're calling it a bribe, which is just for the Clintons. That's just a chump change. The Clintons take in more than that in a single day, and nothing happens to the Clintons. All the while, our present governor is a Democrat, so he's never been charged for any of his scams. And I had a show before the election went over all the scams, including the electric car scam where he took money to build an electric car factory in Mississippi, getting these tax concessions and things, then built the factory in China, a totally useless electric car that probably goes 35 miles per hour if you're going downhill with a tailwind. And he had another scam where he'd promised to convert a derelict paper mill that had been shut down into a factory that makes wood pellets, and I don't think that ever came to fruition, unless it happened recently, but it didn't happen as promised. Nothing ever happened about that, even though the campaign ads were showing him over there in China bragging about opening the car factory in China. Meanwhile, he ducks and covers and says, well, he's just a minor investor in the company. He didn't have anything to do with it. But nothing's being charged there. Meanwhile, Rick Perry in Texas, he's being charged criminally for doing his job.
Right. Well, that's because in this particular case, it means the worst possible crime that you can commit, withholding money from a Democrat. That's really what this comes down to. You've got the abuse of authority going on down there. And, you know, Governor Rick Perry has probably looked more presidential in the last year with how he's dealing with the border issue and stepping up with this particular DA and her public decency agency that she was supposed to be running, withholding the funds for that, doing his job. He saw that there was an issue. This woman has obviously got problems. I mean, she is an alcoholic, and I don't mean to diminish that in any way, but this is not a somebody that should be in charge of public funds as a result. She's not capable of moving forth on convictions for drunk drivers without being a complete and total hypocrite. She was arrested for drinking and driving. She was put in the drunk tank where she constantly made threats to the officers about, do you know who I am? Do you know what I can have done to you? Blah, blah, blah. It's like anybody who's drunk on power, and we've probably all seen some of our local politicians get into similar scrapes. But Governor Perry did his job, and one of the few powers, most people don't understand how limited the governorship is by authority in Texas. It has one of the weakest governor positions in the country. Most governors have a fairly sizable amount of executive power by the state constitutions. Texas is very limited, but this is clearly one of the cases where that Governor Perry actually has the authority to withhold those funds. Otherwise, he couldn't have done it. The state legislature would have, the state legislation would have intervened. They did not, and there is a reason, because it was completely legal, and he, like you said, is just doing his job. And when you have folks that have been associated with the Obama administration coming forward and saying that it sounds pretty sketchy, then I think probably ought to be dropped. We talked a little bit last week and maybe even a little in the week before that about how there are reports that one of the people that sat on the grand jury that passed the indictment was one of the biggest Democratic operators within the state. Now, if you want to assume that he's going to ignore his political agenda and just serve as a member of the grand jury, that would be a lovely idea, and I would love for that to be the case. But you do have to be aware that maybe he did have a political agenda. We've got another caller on the line. I'm going to go ahead and let them in, and we'll see what they have to say. Caller, you're on the air.
Am I on?
You are on.
All right, well, you're kind of ambitious. I didn't have my hand up, but that's okay. So I just got here, and the title of your show is Acts of Jihad in America. All right, so I presume you're somebody who says that it's the Muslims who are that are the problem in America. Just how big of a problem do you think they are?
Well, when it comes down to the people that are actively seeking to kill people, that's a pretty big problem. Now, I don't claim that all Muslims believe that, but my more to the point, the issue that I was trying to bring up is the fact that we have a media that was refusing to report these stories in a fashion that gave all the information.
All right.
I think it's important that we...
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to find out from you, because apparently you're a conservative, is just how big of a threat do you think the Muslims are from overseas to creating some sort of really significant damage over here? And if they were very, very significant in their agenda, then how come they haven't done it before?
I think more often than not, what you have is a case of opportunity along with resources. These groups rise and fall based on funding, political ties with other governments. ISIS is attempting to form a caliphate. ISIS has made threats, and terrorists want to do terrorism. How big is a threat is it? I think it's a significant one based on the fact that these people tell you every day they want to kill you if you're not one of them.
Well,
and
that I get.
Certainly
I mean, that's in the Quran. Same thing with the Bible. But how realistic is this particular threat?
Well, I think it's far more realistic than most people want to believe just because we have no control whatsoever over our borders.
Well, that's true, but here's the point I'm getting at. Terrorism today is more of a threat than it was years ago. And when it started years ago, under the direction of George Bush, well, and even before that with Clinton and the other presidents who were saying, you know, look out for terrorism, it wasn't much of a threat. You only had about 50 to 200 people in Al-Qaeda. You didn't have a lot of people in the Taliban. And the reason why ISIS have the weapons they have now is because the American government was stupid enough to leave billions of dollars worth of weapons behind in Iraq. So, plus the invasion of countries by America when they didn't have any intent of harming us. So, to me, I see 9/11, yeah, a real big warning sign. But if Osama bin Laden was that intent on doing some sort of caliphate back then, and he was a billionaire, he never did it. And then after that, you've got 13 years of, you know, radical extremists telling us, we're going to kill all Americans, we're going to kill all Americans, but it hasn't even come close. Does that kind of make you think that maybe part of this particular nonsense that we keep hearing is actually that nonsense?
Well, I have to tell you, based on the sudden uptick of the reporting on the story, and based on the fact that we see things like the illegal aliens coming into the San Diego beach, which kind of looks like a dry run, we very well could be facing a media slash black flag operation to try and, again, manipulate the people. So in that reframe, the storylines themselves, while certainly factual, could be a level of BS as far as trying to ramp up how safe we feel and what we're willing to do. Yeah, I'm willing to concede that because I have concerns along those lines too.
Yeah, and don't misunderstand me. I'm not oblivious to the fact of how dangerous the border is. But the point I'm getting at also is that the border's been dangerous for a long time, and neither Clinton nor Bush nor Obama really seem inclined to really do anything about it despite all the rhetoric. I happen to believe that they want the immigrants to come across the border. I think they want
I was just going to say, I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah, they want these voters who don't really give a rat's ass about America, don't give a crap about our culture, don't care about our history. They want to come here, sure, in order to get away from their dire circumstances back home. But also, we're offering them, as soon as they cross the border, benefits. So why wouldn't people come here? And why wouldn't the people in Congress naturally think that it would be a natural incentive in order for that to be done? I think it's being done on purpose. You believe it's being done on purpose. I think that Congress for a while is a bunch of people who don't care about America and wouldn't care if America went down the drain as long as they got the money from the lobbyists. That's my opinion.
Well, I'd certainly say that that's a very valid opinion, too. And in truth, we have a government right now, particularly in Congress, that not only flourishes on the political theater of pretending to do stuff when actually nothing's being changed, but there are constituencies, voting blocks, that they're trying to appeal to. As far as the people actually crossing the border, I don't know what the numbers are specifically because nobody is accurately counting, but I do tend to think the majority of them are pretty much what the folks on the left like to say, just folks looking for a better life. And I would be more than happy to have them come here if they would do it legally, because that way we can help them to acclimate to being here. That's part of what the legal immigration process is for. It's for acclimating and bringing them into the old, quote, melting pot.
Well,
Go ahead.
I'm even more radical than you are. I don't think we need any more immigrants here, legal or illegal. We have 305 million people here. We have people who are undereducated. We have already about 18 to 30 million, depending upon whatever the estimate is, of illegals here. We don't need them. The more people which occupy any space, doesn't matter if it's America or Germany or Yugoslavia, the lesser the chance of that particular citizenry to acquire a job or to be successful in business. When you have underclasses here, poorly educated people, a government which doesn't care, which in fact is a corrupt and, in my opinion, a traitorous government, then bringing in more people to an economy in which there's already 94 million people out of work is just plain national suicide. So I don't want any illegals here. Illegals. I don't want any immigrants here. I don't care if they're PhDs from India. I don't care where they're from. Natural-born citizens within their own borders should have the right to pursue their own particular agenda without competition from outsiders.
All right. I certainly find no flaw in your argument. I wouldn't pretend to. But my thought process has always been, I would love for everyone around the world to embrace the ideologies of individual liberty.
Mm-hmm.
I guess more of my thinking is expansion of America, not through bringing everyone here, but through spreading those ideas. Let citizens immigrate here that are worthwhile, but also being able to maintain control. Maybe we have reached the population point where we no longer need to look towards immigration as a whole. But I'm not a closed borders kind of person. I want our borders controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love for folks to come here who are interested in embracing the ideas of individual liberty so that they can see firsthand both the advantages and the disadvantages so that they can help spread the word of what a great and wonderful concept it is.
Well, a lot of people feel that way. I used to feel that way. But now is the time in which we have to take a look at our circumstances today, not the ideology which was pretty prevalent in the past and which made sense in the past to a degree because people were monitored. Back in the 50s and 60s, you had to have a sponsor. You were monitored to a certain degree by immigration. You had limits on how many people were allowed in the country. You had to study English enough to the point where when you got off of Ellis Island, you knew something about the English language, and because there weren't that many immigrants in the country, you assimilated. If not you, then certainly your kids. Your kids grabbed a hold of their heritage, were proud to be from where they were, but were Americans. And the parents were glad that they were Americans. I don't think that's happening today.
No, I agree with you. It obviously is not. The majority of immigrants that come across the southern border in particular, they come here, they get their jobs, they send their money back to Mexico, Guatemala, wherever they're from, and that's money that never really makes its way back. So we're having both our resources and our riches essentially stolen
mm-hmm.
in a fashion that it can't be repatriated. So, yeah, there's more and more people here that have no interest in becoming Americans. And I have very little tolerance for that either.
Well, yeah, it's good, because if you've ever lived in a neighborhood with immigrants, it's as though they have mental illness. They, from whatever peasant background they came from, or even from Puerto Rico, they don't care about adapting to a middle-class environment. They bring their values with them, which means they they don't know anything about not slamming doors, not staying up beyond midnight, keeping your garbage inside your own confines of your own apartment or house, not parking near other people's driveways, putting the garbage in the garbage can, put the lid on the garbage can. It's as though it's a foreign concept to them, whereby Americans, when they move up, they adapt, and they don't try to bring down real estate values. So immigrants, to me, are verboten, okay? And again, I don't care how educated they are, because just like in the laws of physics, two objects cannot occupy the same space at the same time. If an Indian has my job, or let's say has so-called his job, that means he's got somebody's job, which could have been an American. And the same thing goes for France, Germany, Italy, Afghanistan. Keep your people within your own borders. Build up your own nation. Don't export them over here, and don't import other people who don't care about your culture. To me, it's obvious, but I'm not a political scientist.
All right. Well, let me go ahead and thank you for your call.
Okay.
Head along, but I understand what you're saying, and there's a great deal of validity to everything you're saying. But, right. Ian, thanks for your call.
All right. Take it easy now. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. All right. And, you know, these are things that we've heard people say before, and when you hear these things, lots of people are quick to rush and say, oh, that guy is a xenophobe or that guy is a racist. And what he said was stark. What he said was blunt. But there wasn't racism in what he said. Now, I can appreciate his opinions, and like I said, a big part of what we try to do here is to start the conversations. So understand where he's coming from before passing any kind of judgment. Don't be quick to say, oh, that guy's blah, blah, this, that, the other. Do we have to agree 100% on everything? No. And I would be willing to bet that a lot of folks listening to this broadcast probably do agree with it to one extent or another. But he's right. We've had the discussion about the jobs before, back when Mexican immigration, well, let's call it something else. Immigration is a legal process. Let's call it migration, for lack of a better term. Criminal crossing of the border, criminal trespass, you can call it any of that stuff, whatever you want to call it. But for some time, class of people from Mexico seeking a better life tried to make their way across the border, and it has taken jobs away from Americans. Now, a lot of people now these days claim that these are jobs Americans don't want to do anyway. Well, if you take a look around, there's probably a lot of jobs Americans don't want to do, but given the total lack of jobs available, there's probably more jobs they'd be willing to do now than they would have been willing to do even just 5-10 years ago. Immigration, do we need immigration reform? I say yes, but we don't need the type of reform that our Congress and the current administration is trying to push for. We don't need amnesty. We don't need to pretend like we can't control our own borders, because like I said earlier in the show, we do have the resources and we do have the capability of controlling our borders. We can stop people from coming on shore in San Diego. We can stop people from coming across the Texas border. We can stop people from coming across the Arizona border. We can stop people from coming across the Canadian border. Excuse me. But also, like I've said, we have a group of politicians. And as the last caller pointed out, not just on the Democrat side, that have a vested interest in making sure that they continue coming across our border. The threat, the danger, what we're facing is real. Now, a lot of people still want to set back, and like the last caller said, you know, he's obviously not convinced that ISIS or any other terrorist group is a significant threat. His belief in that is based on the fact that we've had limited terrorist activity. His belief is based on the fact that we haven't seen large-scale attacks since 9/11. Which the anniversary of which is quickly coming upon us, and that false sense of security that I was talking about earlier in the show. If you were listening in the first hour, you heard me say, the United States of America is probably the safest place on the planet, but we are not safe. We have shootings and stabbings and people bludgeoned to death every day. Sometimes people we know. Sometimes people we don't. Sometimes cannon fodder for the beginning of the conversation of gun control. Sometimes something that's kept quiet. Sometimes something as sensationalized as the Columbine shooting or the Sandy Hook shooting. Assuming, of course, you're believing that those events actually happen. I know there's a lot of folks that listen to this show that buy into the theories that Sandy Hook was actually a government-run operation, that no one was actually shot or killed or injured, and that it was all about trying to jumpstart more public outcry for gun control. Since I wasn't there, I'm not going to dismiss that idea. Not saying I buy into it, but not saying that I wouldn't believe it as a possibility either. We have seen our government pull black flag operations in the past. We know they're more than capable, and if these people want to push an agenda, they will do whatever it takes to push that agenda. That much I do believe. That much I do know. So I'm not going to dismiss anything offhand. But just for the sake of argument, let's all agree for a moment that it was exactly as advertised. Nobody saw it coming, or they would have took steps to stop it. We're confronted with crime every day, and when the moment comes that it's you or me, if we're prepared, then maybe we have a good outcome. If we're not, then we probably don't have a good outcome. But one thing is clear and certain. We cannot expect our government, federal, state, local, to adequately protect us. Because, number one, if they're actually honoring and operating within the confines of the Constitution, they literally can't be everywhere at once. And they can't be listening in on our conversations and tracking all of our emails. Oops, guess what? Our federal government is doing that to a large extent, but again, they're not operating within the confines of the Constitution when they do that, are they? I'm a big believer in the Constitution. I love the Constitution, even though it's not a perfect document. The reason I love it, especially before they started adding amendments, I will begrudgingly take on the Bill of Rights. But after the first 10 amendments, everything else gets kind of murky. The Constitution, as written, it was fought. The framers fought tooth and nail, screamed at each other, yelled at each other, threatened duels. And that actually meant to the death at that time, boys and girls. And they did this because they wanted to form a constitutional republic. And they wanted to put as many safeguards as possible in place to make sure that our individual liberties would be protected for as long as they possibly could. But they knew, even from the beginning, at the onset, there would be people that would start trying to assert more power for themselves. That's why we have the checks and balances. That's why we had the Electoral College. That's why the Senate was elected by the state legislatures instead of by the people. The Senate was supposed to be for the state. The House was for the people. And the presidency was supposed to be for everyone. The judicial was supposed to be seeking justice, not social justice, not vengeance, but justice. A lot of people use that word and don't seem to understand what it means. Justice means where the outcome is reasonable, not necessarily fair, but reasonable, based on the limitations that the government has. And we've seen it. The more and more we allow our government to have power and authority over us, the less and less liberty we have. And it's all about incrementalism. In the first hour, the point of the jihad story, last week's jihad story, the point wasn't so much that Islam is bad. Although you all know, if you've listened to my show more than once, I'm not a big fan of it. I don't see it as a religion. I see it as a political objective. I think it always has been. If that hurts some people's feelings, then I apologize. But guess what? This is America, and the only thing I can guarantee you is that if the freedom of speech is being properly used, you will be offended. You do not have the right not to be offended. You have the guarantee that you will be offended. I've been offended, but I'm okay with it. If it gets to be too much, if it's outrageous, then I call attention to it here and wherever anybody will listen to me. And that's what everyone should do. Now, in the last little bit of the show, I wanted to switch up gears just a little bit again. I wanted to touch on one other topic before we went too far. And it's a little bit lighter topic. something that, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't mean much. But that's part of why I wanted to talk about it. Now, we've talked before about the mentality of, in youth sports these days, everybody gets a trophy. You know, we've talked about how ridiculous it is, how it doesn't really serve to protect anybody's self-esteem. But like a lot of other things in our current world, does kind of help to undermine the need to teach the idea of putting forth effort. When I was still in school, and no, this isn't one of those barefoot in the snow uphill both ways stories, but when I was still in school and participating in sports, I won a few trophies. We didn't get trophies for nothing, though. They weren't participation trophies. Now, I didn't win Most Valuable Player. I didn't win Best Offensive Player. I didn't win Best Defensive Player. The trophies I won typically were associated with Best Hustle, a trophy that a lot of schools don't even necessarily offer for their athletes, but the coaching staff wanted to make sure that not only, number one, did they recognize the effort that was being put in, but number two, that everyone else recognized that that's the same level of effort that they expected from other people. I was never a star athlete. Don't get the wrong idea. Don't think I'm going big off the rails here to, oh, yeah, I was a superstar. I wasn't. But I played hard. I pushed myself. And I was the best that I could be. And I had good nights on the basketball court, and I had nights that I wish I had stayed home. And anybody that's played sports, regardless of the sport, has, for any amount of time, has probably had some of both. But recently, somebody conducted a poll. I don't even remember who it was. I came across the story earlier in the week, and I haven't been able to find it. I'll find it again since I was looking to research, and it's probably just lost in the ether of the internet. But they conducted a poll, and more than 40% of Americans believe that all kids that participate in youth sports should receive a trophy just for participating. And that was noteworthy because it's probably the highest number of people that are buying into the notion. We look at our electorate here in the country, and we are nearly at a 50-50 divide on social programs, fiscal responsibility. And they are diametrically opposed. It is one side against the other. You can't have fiscal responsibility when you're overpouring and when you're overpaying, pouring in way too much, blah, 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 easy for me to say, putting way too much money into social programs just to try and keep people from having hurt feelings. We're making life too easy for too many folks. People wanted to make a big deal yesterday about the fact that the St. Louis Rams released the first openly gay player to be drafted to the NFL. Now, he obviously wasn't the first gay player to be in the NFL. Everybody knows there have been gay players in the NFL before. It's like there's been gay players in the NBA. There's been gay players in Major League Baseball. It exists. Just because this guy was the first openly gay person to be drafted, like somehow that's a major accomplishment. It's not. It really isn't. It's not a major accomplishment. The guy, maybe, if you want to say because of his courage to come out before the draft, yeah, if you're that desperate for a hero, that's fine. Maybe it is a big deal to you. Maybe it's just me. Because I don't care about differences in people so much as I do about where we're going as a country. It doesn't matter to me if you're black, white, red, Haitian, Indian, gay, straight, whatever. My general attitude towards all that is, that's you. What I care about is that we can all come together as Americans and move forward. That's what I care about, and I believe we can. But they kept making such a big deal about him getting cut and such a big deal about him getting cut. The only thing that kept occurring to me is that if this guy hadn't come out as gay, he'd get one line along with a couple of other players that were cut on the last day of cuts in the NFL, and that would have been the end of it. Nobody would be talking about it. It would be no big deal. So the media is, again, trying to engineer us into believing certain things are more important than others. Now, I love sports. I'm a sports fan. And today I'm in the rare position of being able to sit here on the show and knowing that here in a few hours I get to say, go Vols. Being here in East Tennessee, I am a University of Tennessee football fan. And it's not too often we play on Sundays, but we get Utah State today. In Knoxville, they celebrated Labor Day, which is, of course, tomorrow, with an annual event that they refer to as Boone's Day, where they have a bunch of fireworks. They do a bigger firework display in Knoxville for Labor Day than they do for the 4th of July. Now, we don't make a big deal about Labor Day here on the show because we are all acutely aware of the socialist mentality that the holiday was derived from. But for most folks, it's just a day to barbecue and to celebrate the unofficial end of the summer season and the move into the fall season. So most folks, it's not about socialism to them. So I'm not above wishing you a happy Labor Day. Just don't make a big deal about it. But because of the big event going on yesterday, they decided to move the football game to today. So we have a Sunday NCAA game that I'm rather excited about. Looking forward to seeing what this new volunteer team is going to look like. So again, go Vols. But the reason I like sports isn't because it's the lifeblood. It isn't because it's desperately important. It's because it's a great place to teach life lessons without it costing us the way life mistakes can. It's particularly in youth sports. You get to learn the importance of putting forth the effort of getting ready, of getting prepared, of doing what you need to do in order to be successful, and to show you what happens if you're not adequately prepared, or when you run into somebody that's better prepared or, sorry to say it, more talented than you are, how to deal with losing with grace and dignity. These are important things that sports teaches, and I, with my whole heart, love seeing young people participating in sports, whether it be football or basketball or baseball or even soccer. As long as the kids are being taught that winning and losing is a consequence. And while you must participate in order to win or lose, you cannot succeed by just participating. You must put in effort. And that takes me to the close of the show. We're inside the last 30 seconds, and it is that effort that I usually like to talk about as we close out. Because here's what I always say, ladies and gentlemen, don't take my word for it. But definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Take a little time, do your own research, dig into the depths, do your own thinking, use your brain, and always be prepared. Put in a little effort if you want to tap into the truth. That's tonight's show. I want to thank the Prime Directive, Larry, for being on today. Thanks for the call. And everybody, guess what? We'll be back next Sunday. Thanks for being with us. Have a great week.
We didn't really know. can say all I need to say. With the time left, counting down by the day. It went going by, I don't know why time flies. It's a heartbreak, but it wasn't good or right. So this is goodbye. I hope all the stars, they shine. Wherever you will go after tonight. So this is our one life. Try my best to make it right. I promise you that I will always wanna fight.